Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Welcome everyone to the Friday edition of this midterms week of the Damage Report. I'm John Iderola and it is Friday. And I know many of you have been out there since Monday thinking, where is Brooke?
Where?
Give us Brooke.
Is she?
Hashtag where's Brooke? Well, Brooke is here. Brooke Thomas.
And it's Friday. I'm so glad to be here. And
I'm glad you're here.
It's a good day. You know, we always pretend Monday's a good day, but it's still Monday.
Friday's a great day. And so this is for you. I want to thank you for you've finished shooting the many TV shows and things that you're on these days, and now you're back to do this.
I am so busy. Hashtag booked and busy. Hashtag rise and grind. I am so busy.
You got a lot of hashtags.
I'm sorry,
can you say what it is that you shot? Is that
okay? Yeah, no, I played a reporter on Veronica Mars episode.
Which is awesome.
I'm
I love
so
Kristen
excited
Bell so much.
To see it. Yeah. And I don't even know much about it. I don't know anything about the episode. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's all top secret.
This is how big of a deal you are. You get these roles and I don't even know.
No, it's not a big deal at all.
But I can't be bothered.
It's really cool. I feel really cool, but
it is very cool.
It's not a big deal.
Okay.
I just feel super blessed.
That's where you're wrong. But today on the show, we got so much to talk about. There are recounts happening all over the country. Some people like it, some people hate it because it might lead to them losing races. So we're gonna be talking about that. A little bit later on the show, journalist Lauren Duke is gonna be joining the show once again. She's gonna talk to us about those midterms, some of the crazy interactions between this administration and the media since then, and some of the history that was made on Election Day. Sort of related to that, later on, I'm interested, Brooke. So we've got three instances where Donald Trump interacted with black female reporters. And I noticed a pattern those interactions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna show those a little bit later on.
I tell you, Ryan deserves she deserves some sort of spa day every day, some sort of mental relaxation.
I would, Abby Phillips as well, I think. Yeah. But we're gonna be breaking that down. Then protests around the country over Jeff Sessions being pushed out as AG. We're gonna talk about that. And finally, the Dems won the governorship in Wisconsin for what it's worth. And it might not be worth much in the near future, thanks to the Republicans. We'll explain how that works a little bit later on. But first, to the recounts. It looked like in some of the most high profile races in the midterms, the Democrats came up, unfortunately, kind of short. In races like in the gubernatorial races in Georgia and Florida, there you're seeing Andrew Gillum. The Senate race in Florida, it was super tight, but the Republicans were up. And then they counted more votes, and they counted more votes. And lo and behold, in the places that are kind of Democratic, that are also urban, there's huge numbers of votes in a very small area. It took them a little bit longer to count some, and it's getting closer and closer, triggering recounts in multiple places. So let's break that down. Arizona's Representative Kristen Sinema is now actually ahead of Representative Martha McSally by, this is 2,000 votes. I think it might be up to 9,000 votes now. That's over in the Senate race in Arizona. Florida Governor Rick Scott leads incumbent Senator Bill Nelson by about 15,000 votes. I believe that is 0.18% of the vote. So bear that in mind as we read some Rick Scott quotes for you a little bit later on. Representative Ron DeSantis, who the AP has already declared the winner, is ahead of Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum by about 35,000 votes. That's like, I believe it's like 0.5% or something like that. And we might get a recount there. And former State House Minority Leader Stacey Abrams is down to Brian Kemp in Georgia by 63,000 votes in that race. So very close. We have requests for recounts in basically all of those, and votes are still being counted. So understand, they're talking about doing a recount. We're not in the recount yet. We are still in the count.
Right, we're still counting votes that haven't even been counted yet.
Yes.
In Florida, you know, they have a history of struggling with counting all votes, certifying all votes. So,
yeah, exactly. And so there's a lot of controversy about this. And Brian Schatz tweeted out they used to oppose recounts, now they're opposing counts. And so Donald Trump is tweeting about this. We're going to have that for you in a little bit. The actual politicians are getting involved. And many of their Republican followers just already believe, no, we feel like we won it on Election Day. Don't count these votes, we don't care. And there's all these conspiracy theories going around that we're gonna break down. But the most high profile opposition to these counts is Rick Scott, who is narrowly, very narrowly ahead in his Senate race in Florida. He said the people of Florida deserve fairness and transparency, and the supervisors in some of these areas still doing counts are failing to give it to us. Every Floridian should be concerned there may be rampant fraud happening in Palm Beach and Broward counties. We've all seen the incompetence and irregularities in vote tabulations, blah, blah, blah there. I will not sit idly by while unethical liberals try to steal this election from the great people of Florida. So again, remember, he is winning by 0.18%. The idea that this vast majority of Republicans are being opposed by these liberals, like, it is as narrow as it could possibly be. He is, and again, we've gotten used to a lot in this country. But the current governor of Florida is simply asserting that there is fraud happening. He has presented no evidence whatsoever.
Right.
I'm not saying evidence that I don't accept. I'm saying he has not given any evidence at all and is simply saying that they should be investigated, that these people counting the vote should be investigated.
From the governor's mansion. Like, come on.
Yeah, it's in just a race that he is in.
Right.
So he's not like Brian Kemp. He's not the Secretary of State, but he's still finding a way to get involved in his own race's counting.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump has also tweeted. He said, "You mean they are just now finding votes in Florida and Georgia, but the election was on Tuesday? Let's blame the Russians and demand an immediate apology from President Putin." And if you bring up this next one, he also said something about sending lawyers down. So here's the thing. There's so many just ridiculous statements that people like Donald Trump and random people on Twitter, and they're basically as the intellectual value is the same across those two things. They're not suddenly finding votes. It is very, very common, very common. I would say probably the norm that on election day, when races are called, they have not counted all votes. It's just that the outstanding votes are smaller than the gap between the two candidates.
Exactly.
And so they can call it.
Right. It's like Survivor. He does
it. How is it like Survivor?
On Survivor, okay, if there's 10 people, 10 votes, if it gets down to, you know, six, he doesn't read off the next four because it didn't matter.
Because we already know.
We already know who's out.
Yes.
That's what happens.
And these races are too tight for that.
Right.
So it is always the case. I mean, in some of the primary, like the California Democratic primary in 2016, they were still counting the total number of votes like a month after. It didn't change the result at all, but it takes that long.
Right.
And the Republicans have really set up an amazing situation here, where in these Democratic areas, they suppress the vote, they strip them of voting places, of voting machines, they strip them of the resources necessary to do the counts, and then, God forbid, at the end of the night, they haven't counted every vote, then they say we should just ignore the rest.
Right.
It is a wonderful anti-democratic system that they have set up there. And they've convinced their followers that if you don't know, Rudy Giuliani tweeted that after the first county is done counting votes, no other votes should be counted in any county, which would set off an amazing race on election day for like the Democratic counties versus the Republicans. That makes no sense whatsoever. But they don't want a count to actually happen here. That is the fundamental truth. For all the lies they're spreading around, they don't want you to know who actually won in these areas. They just want the seats.
They want the count to be stopped once they've gotten the result that they want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Trump, he's still tweeting about this. Rick Scott was up by 50,000 votes on election day. Now they, quote, found many votes and he's only up 15,000 votes. The Broward effect, how come they never find Republican votes? So the reason I read this is because on Twitter, I am seeing that his followers really do think that the only votes coming in now are Democratic votes. That's not how it works at all.
No.
It's an area that leans Democratic. So as you get the votes from that area, you get some Republican, some Democratic, some Republican, some Democratic, and it leans Democratic. But there are many, many Republican votes that Donald Trump and his Republican supporters are saying should not be counted. Screw you if you're a Republican and you live in Palm Beach or Broward County. They're not interested in your input because we're worried that there might be a few more Democrats.
Also, this is an area that has had many issues over, like we're almost two decades.
Mm-hmm.
This is something they've all had plenty of time to complain about or to bring to someone's attention. So this is nothing new. And so it should be a problem to anyone who reads that tweet that the president doesn't know that or doesn't know the history.
Yeah.
I mean.
And so here's the thing. If they really hate this, if they think this situation is just unacceptable, whether it's fraud or just incompetence, I've got an amazing set of solutions that we can have. We can have an election day holiday. We can have automatic voter registration. We can have like a month of pre-election voting. We can triple or quadruple the resources given for poll workers and voting machines. Right now in Florida, one of the problems they're coming up against, and Bill Nelson is actually launching he's suing the state, is that there's only a certain amount of time to actually do these recounts if it comes to a recount. And their recount machines can only conduct one recount at a time. But as of right now, there are multiple statewide elections that are within the margin where they need a recount, which means that under the law, there's not enough time to actually conduct the multiple recounts they would need to do. And that is a result of us saying, we don't care how elections are run. We're not gonna give them the resources. We're gonna suppress the vote as much as possible. We don't have to have it that way. We can have smooth elections if we actually prioritize it. But to get there, we're gonna need both parties to actually care about democracy in this country.
Right.
It's unfortunate, but it is going forward. That means that what was already a good midterm in a lot of ways that we've talked about, some that we'll get to, could be even better if some of these races do end up flipping like the Kristen Sinema race in Arizona ended up.
It's not over.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
It's not over just
yet.
And that happens, by the way. We were saying before
every
the election, there were some races we wouldn't know.
Election, this happens.
Exactly. Right? And every time, some people will just be shocked at the way it works in this country.
Right.
Anyway, with that said, we are going to take our first break. When we come back, Lauren Duke is going to be joining us. We're going to talk about the midterms and some other recent developments after this. Welcome back, everyone. And now joining us on the Damage Report, Lauren Duke, a journalist. Welcome back, Lauren.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. I'm excited on your thoughts on the midterm and some of the stuff that's been developing throughout the week. First, on the midterms, there's this debate going on about whether it was actually a wave, whether it was actually a win. I'm seeing like Brett Stevens is saying this is proof that the Democrats need to reach out to the right. What do you think about this debate? Was it actually a win?
I mean, I think that we've just lost so much to the kind of narrative industry in the political conversation now. This was never going to look like a landslide. It was, that's not the way change happens. I'm most interested in the way government is completely changing its face. I mean, the women that were elected, the first time runners that were elected, and the youth turnout. This is the highest participation in a quarter century, and it's just the midterms. So I don't know. I am optimistic and geared up, and I'm not gonna lie, I ordered another drink when I saw Gillum and Beto lost, but I think that overall that we see progress.
Yeah, I do wanna ask you about some of those races. So you mentioned there we had historic total numbers of female candidates winning. We're gonna have the mm-hmm. highest representation, I believe, in Congress. And then you had standout
100
races.
Women or will be seated for the first time in history. I mean, that's
exactly
incredible.
Yeah. Which is still wildly underrepresented, of course. We should acknowledge that. But history, yay. So you also had people of color winning in many races. You had LGBTQ candidates. Do you think that this is something that is definitely going to be built on in future elections? Is there any way to get, because almost all these wins were on the Democratic side, are we going to see any more representation on the Republican side in terms of more female candidates, people of color, things like that?
I mean, it's hard to talk about this because I am somebody who, you know, has a set of journalistic ethics and also tends to identify with what is perceived as the left. So I guess something I want to be really clear about before I get into that question is I think that there is only one side right now. And I think that the one side is preserving democracy. And then once we can get that back in check, rebuilding it and fighting for equity and a true, you know, a truer, more equitable version of democracy. And there's all different labels for all of those things. We tend to see this new electorate, this new leadership is happening most visibly on the left because those policies tend to track with equity. And what we're seeing on the right now is a lot of nationalism at varying degrees. So I don't know if there are going to be more women running on the right, but I think that that's sort of an irrelevant question because there's such a crisis of ethics happening that are upholding white supremacist patriarchy through policy and the people who remain in power. And something that I'm not going to lie was an extremely upsetting takeaway is that you have such high turnout in a place like Texas and Ted Cruz winning. I always want there to be more people voting. But I am honestly truly mystified by the women showing up in droves to vote for Ted Cruz. And so I think that we still on the right, there are politically active women. There are politically active young people. I don't like to think about that. And I don't totally understand what they're fighting for. But I think it has to do with who this country belongs to and doesn't, and preserving old power structures. And I'm not very interested in that.
Yeah, so related to that, I noticed, I think it was in the governor's race in Georgia, I think white women voted 74% for Brian Kemp, which is a gigantic turnout there. So that's certainly rough. There's definitely a lot of progress needed to be made in a bunch of different areas. You briefly mentioned Ted Cruz. Was that one of the worst nights of the election for you when that race was called?
I mean, you know, I think that those were the two of the big ticket items. Obviously, the third was Stacey Abrams, and you had hope for one of those three coming through. I still do think that the fact that these people were able to call into question what might have been an impossibility, and by the way, Stacey Abrams is still not totally out of the conversation here. Yep. I think that was, it was crushing to see the two of them. I wasn't sure how tuned in to be. But I think that, you know, what Beto has done and awakened is something we can talk about kind of across the country, where people are having these conversations more and more. They're opening their eyes to what is possible, and seeds are being planted. And you know, people who are from Texas are now saying, "Holy crap, that I might have the right to have a representative who actually represents me, who I'm actually excited in, and this is not just an inevitability, and I don't just have to accept, you know, a sack of cockroaches as the state of my representation." And I think that we see that those conversations spreading. People are looking at what's possible. People are looking at new possibilities for what can happen. And so even though this was a loss in a lot of ways, it's more of a rumbling of an awakening that will continue to happen and hopefully feels much bigger in 2 years from now.
Well, I certainly hope so. I did want to ask you about some of what's happened since the election, actually. So I'm sure you, like us, maybe you're on you're more to the east. It might have been a different time, but I woke up to the notification that Ruth Bader Ginsburg had fallen and injured herself pretty badly. What did you think when you saw that pop up?
I thought that I honestly would just start taking out my ribs just in case. Like, I just thought I would just get a kitchen knife and like just take them out in case you need them. Maybe I'll put them in the freezer. I don't know. I campaigned really hard against Kavanaugh, and that was a really crushing blow. I think that Kavanaugh's confirmation is the worst a lot of people have felt since November 9th, 2016. And as big of a blow as that was, I'm, you know, hoping that it riles people up and that energy can continue to be translated into fury, because it's just such a gross injustice. I don't know. I hate to see, I cringe to think of what would happen if she can't hold her planks anymore. Yeah. But there's definitely a newly awakened group of people that is aware of the court, aware of conversations about court reform, even, I think, are beginning to gain some momentum. And we no longer see SCOTUS as this kind of sanitized public institution that is not, you know, sanitized. It's a public institution and it should reflect public will. And the senators who are confirming it are reflecting their constituents. And that didn't happen with Kavanaugh. Yeah. And I think that, you know, there was such a grotesque display of the Me Too tragedy in the last weeks of it. But I was opposed to his nomination based on the lack of a public mandate, yeah, and based on the lack of representation. So, you know, whatever is thrown up in the wake of possibly losing Ruth Bader will be a struggle, but I think it's something that people are ready to take on.
I do have one more question for you. So like the day after the election, we had Donald Trump's press conference and he was, you know, he's his normal awful self, but he's been brawling with reporters. He seemed to have set his sights on every black female reporter that he can come across. He's changing the asylum laws. He banned a reporter. He fired Jeff Sessions. So he's been making a lot of moves these last few days. Like, he's been awful for 2 years, but he's been awful with unified government. Now he's going to face actual opposition. Are you worried that as bad as things have been, that we could have an actual worse, darker Donald Trump for the next 2 years?
I mean, it's always going to be worse. Like, every day, I think it's just worse based on projections of the past, you know, 2 years. Yes. But I guess that is a check that we didn't have before. So, I mean, I think that it will be crucial in as we continue to see the rise of authoritarianism and, you know, and I mean, just even this complete and total disregard for anything even resembling democracy at this point. It's like there's not a hyperbolic way to put it. Yeah. So at least there is some formal power to check, to keep some sort of a check on it. And I mean, it is frightening how much power Mitch McConnell has now too. But there's some one half of the branches of government might keep us on track to not becoming China.
So, Brooke, you had a question?
I do. Lauren, hi, good morning. I want to know, back to what we were talking about, the midterms and you know, a lot of like this awakening of voters. But I want to know, does this make you hopeful? Even in the races that lost or we're not sure about, they are so tight. Does this make you hopeful for, and everything that went well, encouraging more future politicians that they can run on these incredibly, you know, humane and progressive platforms and that it can work?
Yes, and I hope so. And I also think it can't really be even understated that the fact that these races are even happening, when they're even unsuccessful, I mean, the work of campaigning, the work of running, that invigorates the health of democracy. Obviously, as I am very transparent about, I support it with progressive candidates, but really anybody running, you're talking to more people, you're knocking on more doors, you're getting more voters to even begin to be aware that the positions exist. Like, we're talking about the top of the ticket, but it goes all the way down and to elected office at the local level, where you have people start to think about their agency differently. And the more people we can have running, the healthier our democracy is going to be. And I mean, I think Run for Something, that specific organization, has had such a boon in the past 2 years. I mean, they've completely taken off and they have some interesting statistics that I don't have top of mind. But I mean, I think people are only just getting started. And now we're seeing even more concrete evidence, and hopefully it will build and build. But that, I mean, I think that is absolutely an optimistic takeaway.
Okay. And I think that is a good optimistic point to end on as well. Lauren Duca, thank you for joining us once again on the Damage Report. Great to have you here. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. When we come back, Donald Trump and his feud with the media has taken a very particular demographic turn, which we'll break down after this. Welcome back to the Damage Report, everybody. It's me, John, and Brooke is here as well.
Hi.
Great to have you here. Mm-hmm. So it's good that you're here and not in the White House, because if you were in the White House, you'd be brawling with the president right now.
You'd be stressed. Right, uh-huh.
Donald Trump hates the media. We know that. We've known that for a very long time. But there's certain types of media that he hates even more. None more than Jim Acosta. But after Jim Acosta, then suddenly you have black female reporters. He can't deal with that sort of subset of the reporters. And in just the past couple of days, he's had a number of incredibly misogynistic and racist interactions with them. Let's take a tour of the past 72 hours with Donald Trump. First, this is from this morning. He's asked a very reasonable question by Abby Phillips, I believe it is, which you're going to see right here.
You want him to rein in Robert Mueller?
What a stupid question that is. What a stupid question. But I watch you a lot. You ask a lot of stupid questions.
So right there, you have the president of the United States. A black female reporter asks him the most reasonable, nay, obvious question. You just fired your AG because he wouldn't rein in Robert Mueller. She just wants to get you on record to say what you obviously are going to do, which is rein him in. And he says, not only was that a stupid question, but you ask a lot of stupid questions.
Yeah, I mean, it's a way of calling someone dumb without explicitly saying it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a horrible thing. That is how the president of the United States speaks to a woman.
Mm-hmm. And just
when
shakes
you could
his
just
head.
Move on.
Yeah.
You totally have the right to just not answer a question. You don't, because guess what? You're the president.
Yeah.
You can ask, but I guess you could also berate them and embarrass and humiliate them and.
Yeah.
But I guess you always have that option too, I guess.
And it's so you're gonna see this in the next two that we're gonna do as well. You never know with him how much is strategy and how much is honest. Like, I think the interaction he had with Jim Acosta seems like the sort of interaction he wanted to have with Jim Acosta a couple days ago. He wants to brawl with him. He's fake news, blah, blah, blah. It's a good narrative for him. But I do think that sometimes his sort of latent feelings for people just come out in the particular insults he uses. Like, he calls only black people low IQ. That is the only people that get that particular designator from him. And it could be that he sat down and said, this is a good strategy, or it could be that he's just being honest. And I think that we're seeing that with these as well.
It also happens to be an old racist trope. Mm-hmm. So they match, but you know.
Well, let's see some more. Okay. So Yamiche Alcindor for PBS's NewsHour had a question at that press conference a couple of days ago, and here's how that played out.
Hi, Mr. President. Yamiche Alcindor with PBS NewsHour. On the campaign trail, you called yourself a nationalist. Some people saw that as emboldening white nationalists. Now people are also saying
that
the president.
That's such a racist question.
There are some people that say that now the Republican Party is seen as supporting white nationalists because of your rhetoric. What do you make of that?
I don't believe it. I don't know. Why do I have my highest poll numbers ever with African Americans? Why do I have among the highest poll numbers with African Americans? I mean, why do I have my highest poll numbers? That's such a racist question. Honestly? I mean, I know you have it written down and you're going to tell me. Let me tell you, that's a racist question.
And so if you're listening to the podcast, you can't see that it's not just that he's continually saying that this black female is being racist in saying, hey, you're kind of appealing to white nationalists. That's worrisome. And she's not even saying that she believes that. She's saying some people are saying that. You can respond, say it's wrong. But he's doing this. It's so, can you come to me? It's so racist that you would do racist. Why are you doing that to me, racist?
Also,
so condescending.
Her question was based on facts. It had nothing. It was based on facts. It can be an offensive question to him if it hurts his feelings or if it embarrasses him. Sure, that's. But her question was based on facts, like factual knowledge that she has. And he called her racist, essentially, and then started saying things that. And this is what happens with Jim Acosta. Like, he starts saying things that then need a follow up. And so then, just by definition, it ends up combative. Yeah. Also,
because he doesn't answer the question.
Because he doesn't answer the question. Or then he says something that then is not factual. And so, in order to wrap back around to your question, you have to correct what he just said.
Yeah.
And yeah, he may have, you know, his highest, you know, poll numbers with African Americans because it's not hard to go from 6 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? It's hard to go from 6 to 50. But that's, you know, that's not what's happened. But I just, also the strength that one has to have. And I think this is something that comes up generally, like when you talk about, like when you say like, oh, this is offensive. When you know, this is a response that we're gonna get to just pointing this out. Oh, you guys are so sensitive. You can't say anything this day. Everyone gets offended. Let me tell you, black people are the least sensitive people you would ever meet. Because if you look at that and the strength that she has to have to even just finish her question as someone is just berating her like that, you have no idea. If you think that is sensitivity and you're offended by us having this conversation, then you could not be a black person in America because sensitivity, you just don't have the option for it.
Well, and thankfully, she hasn't been banned yet. That's nice. She did tweet out, "I'm simply asking the questions the public wants to know." Very nice of her. She was also speaking out in support of Abby Phillips earlier on today. And here's the thing, so a similar thing happened to April Ryan. We unfortunately don't have time for the video, but a similar thing happened to April Ryan. That was one part of this insane press conference. I saw Lulu Garcia Navarro, who's a foreign correspondent, said, and I say this as someone who has lived in war zones, covered crazy Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein era press conferences, that this is happening here is insane. And that is what it is. I know that like half the country is like, yeah, own them libs. I don't care what happens to our democracy. But for the rest of us, this is not the relationship the president is supposed to have with people asking incredibly reasonable questions that people want answers to.
Yeah.
And this is how an autocrat responds to media.
Right. And with the April Ryan piece, she talked about it on The View. There was so much more to it that we didn't see because we only, you know, really can hear what's mic'd up. Mm-hmm. But they were sort of having a conversation while the microphone was being passed to another reporter. Mm-hmm. And so she stood up because he responded to her.
Yeah.
And like kind of under his breath. And then he told her to sit down. And so she thought that she had gotten, you know, almost permission to go forward with what they were talking about.
Yeah.
So
and remember, as all of this is going on, they also banned a reporter from the White House for asking questions. Mm-hmm. They used fake news, a video, a doctored video from a conspiracy theory website to justify banning him. And I know that people online love to say that they're in support of the First Amendment and protecting free speech and things like that. This is when you need to do that, not in protecting like the harassment campaigns of conspiracy theorists on Gab or something. This is when the government is actually cracking down on the First Amendment and free speech rights. It would be great for everyone to be unified in their opposition to these moves.
And don't forget that press works for all of us. Mm-hmm. Like they are an extension of us when asking these questions and giving these facts and correcting lies.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it would be nice for more people to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
With that said, we do have to take a break. We come back, protests around the country. What are they about? We'll break it down for you. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Donald Trump is feuding with a lot of people today, but apparently Michelle Obama is one of those. So I know you were talking about this earlier.
We're talking this morning. So she's got a book coming out. So she did a piece with Robin Roberts on Good Morning America. Sit down interview. I think in full it's going to air later, but the big piece of it aired this morning. And afterwards, George Stephanopoulos had an excerpt from her book where she said that she couldn't forgive President Trump for the birther conspiracy that he pushed because it put her family, her children, it put their lives in danger. And and we know that it did. And we also know that it was a racist lie.
Yeah.
And he was asked about that out this morning by some reporters. And he bit back by saying, like, you know, okay, I hear that. I'll never forgive her husband for ruining the military. And everyone is like, wait, what? And then he went into this whole thing about how he's having to spend so much money to fix this broken military. And he promises to tell us more about that later.
I can't wait. Because, I'm sure it's going to happen.
And of course, you know, and I always question myself, like, wait, was this something that I should have known about? What is he talking about? Mm-hmm. But I don't think it, I think it
I
started.
I think it might be BS.
This discussion started right there. Which is mind-blowing.
Yeah, so do you want to know over the course of 8 years how much Barack Obama spent on the military? $7 bajillion.
Right.
It was infinite money, just infinite. Every year the spending has gone up for 75 years, basically. That is what's been going on. He spent tons and tons of money. It was one of the things we criticism on. It's ridiculous. No matter what the situation with the military coming in was, Donald Trump was going to say, and this is not a Donald Trump thing, this is a Republican president thing, they were going to say that we need to increase military spending by 50% or whatever. So that is all BS. He doesn't want to respond to the fact that the birther thing was racist, it was stupid, and it was a lie from day one. There was never any evidence for it. He still occasionally says that he believes that he was right there. Mm-hmm. And there's a significant number of Americans who believe that content-free, fact-free BS.
And what we know is that her statement was true. It was, she absolutely, by saying that and promoting that, did put her family in danger, because every single time we have one of these, you know, right-wing mass shooters, it is because they just have become so incensed by these lies that have, you know, come from somewhere, some website they're looking at or something the president said that they ran with. And there are people that believe these things.
And Melania pushed it too.
She sure
just
did.
Got to put that.
Because people forget that. Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to other news. So obviously Jeff Sessions was pushed out. And for many people, that is a red line. That shows that the campaign by Donald Trump and his cronies against the special counsel's investigation has moved into a newer, even more dangerous and obstructee zone. And so protests sprang up around the country on Thursday night. I saw one in, it was like the Ventura area up in north of LA. But they are all over the place. And lots of people very worried that he is going to either shut down the investigation or cut all of its funding, stop, you know, requests, you know, for various things. So they can sort of blatantly get rid of it, or they can sort of behind closed doors get rid of it. And either way, this would be massive obstruction of justice. And so I want to talk about this protest. I also just want to acknowledge, and this was sort of controversial when I tweeted it earlier, all of this stuff that he's doing, you do not do if Mueller's got nothing and Mueller's going to find nothing. Okay, you shut down an investigation if you're worried about it, not if it's just off in the background wasting its own time and money. And so now people are really worried. Do you think that they are right to be worried?
Absolutely, they're right to be worried. And I think what you just said was right. I think regardless of what he has or doesn't have, if you support investigating something that absolutely needs an investigation, mm-hmm. you don't try to shut it down.
Yeah.
But what a world that we are in, that a bunch of people, all of these situations have trickled down to where we are in a space where a lot of people on the left are upset that Mr. Jefferson Beauregard Sessions is no longer the leader of the Justice Department. Do you know what I mean? Just kind of think about that. That's where we are.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe, wow. Maybe he was actually great and people don't acknowledge. Not a bad guy.
But that it has become a bad thing to that's mm-hmm. that's where we are with this investigation, that him no longer leading the Justice Department has become a bad thing yeah. for people who really hated him being there in the first place.
He is just the least worst option in this one particular area. It is certainly possible that in other areas of actually doing the job of being an AG, that other AGs would be much better. He is terrible, you know, obviously in a lot of different areas.
But he did one thing that a lot of people around wanted him to do, recuse himself. Yeah. And
one of the reasons I think a lot of people are focusing on this one part is the belief, and part of it is just, you know, when you've been kicked every day for a couple of years, you start to believe this, that no matter who Donald Trump is going to get, is going to be awful on those other things too.
Right.
That's sort of what I just assume. So let's turn to this first video. You're going to have Dick Durbin at one of the Chicago protests that was going on yesterday talking about why this is so important.
We are, in fact, facing a countdown clock that began on Election Day, when it became clear that the American people decided that we would restore the Democratic majority in the U.S. House of Representatives to guarantee that there would be the check and balance which our Constitution requires. Unfortunately, it was at that moment when a decision was made in the White House to force the resignation of Jeff Sessions as the Attorney General. We knew it was coming for a long, long time. The president wasn't the least bit subtle about his opinions on Jeff Sessions, but to take the day after the election to force his resignation was significant.
And reason to be worried. And especially the more that we learn about this guy replacing him, Matt Whitaker, he has previously said that the president can't be indicted. You can't investigate his finances. You can't investigate his family. You can't investigate the Trump Organization. Oh, by the way, Russia didn't interfere in the election, which is a standout opinion even amongst Trump officials at this point. Like they've seemed to have fallen back on, well, yeah, obviously they tried to influence the election, but we didn't do it with them. Mm-hmm. He's saying they didn't do anything. And thus, is it a surprise that he believes that this investigation is a witch hunt, one that he seems primed to want to destroy? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's turn to, we've been mocking Jeff Sessions. There's one other person I want to mock in the time that we have left. Lindsey Graham is a weenie. And he's a weenie for a lot of different reasons. But one is that something has happened to him over the past year where previously he'd been willing to stand up to Donald Trump at least a little bit, and now he doesn't. My theory is that Donald Trump hung him out of a window by his feet.
Is that okay?
And would have dropped him if he didn't say that. I won't do anything anymore.
Okay.
But so here's the issue. On this particular issue of Jeff Sessions being forced out, pre-hanging out a window, Lindsey Graham was very clear about what that would trigger.
I'm 100% behind Jeff Sessions. The chairman of the Judiciary Committee sent a pretty chilling tweet yesterday. There will be no confirmation hearing for a new attorney general in 2017. If Jeff Sessions is fired, there will be holy hell to pay. Any effort to go after Mueller could be the beginning of the end of the Trump presidency.
Holy hell to pay and the beginning of the end of the Trump presidency. Strong words that he doesn't support, as you'll see.
So given where we are now, what do you say now?
So when was that? What
year? July of 2017. Things have changed.
What I've been So what I've been saying for months is that everybody, every president deserves an attorney general they have confidence in and they can work with.
So credit to Fox News for playing that previous video for him. And then that does look bad.
Also,
and he, of course, I've been saying he should be able to work. Holy hell, who said that? Who said holy hell?
Also, what year was that? Well, last year, sir.
And he's just seen that video a million times since then.
He knows he said that. But I love that there was no like, it was just basically his answer amounted to, right, that was a year ago, but last month I said this, so that's what we're on right now. Mm-hmm. And okay.
Yeah, Lindsey Graham is a sad, sad guy. Just briefly want to mention, we don't have time to go into the details, but Tony Evers defeated Scott Walker for Wisconsin's governor's race. Super tight, super important, because Scott Walker is absolutely terrible. And already, I want you to be on the lookout, so this, I guess, is your homework for the weekend and going forward. Is the Republican legislature in Wisconsin is talking about all the different things they can do to take away the powers of the governor now that a Democrat has won. And they're saying, you know, maybe we gave Scott Walker too much power and, you know, now that he's lost, we need to think about that again. Remember, they tried to do the same thing in North Carolina. Thankfully, a couple of ballot measures that would have stripped the now Democratic governor of power failed on Tuesday night, but they're attempting to do it again. It is top to bottom, they're done with democracy. They're not interested in it. They don't care about the votes. And if we actually win, which is very difficult considering all the suppression and the gerrymandering, all of that, they're gonna do everything they can to make sure that we don't gain any actual power out of it. So be on the lookout for that.
Yeah, and these kind of things that happen and have been happening. There's like a push for that, even in Georgia with Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. They've made that, the governor has made that. I think almost knowing and seeing where things are going, that maybe our side is not going to be in power. So, and I don't want this. So when I'm gone, let's make it so it's really hard. So the governor can't just sign off on it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's 10 tips and tricks for how to make a democracy worthless.
Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back. What did we learn this week? Welcome back, everyone. So that week was a doozy. So much happened, obviously midterms, but a lot of other stuff. So why don't we take a look back, take stock in a segment we call This Week I Learned. Let's see if this week blew our minds. First of all, did you learn anything this week?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What'd you learn?
I learned that, you know, we're still not there in things like blatant racism being disqualifiers in when it comes to running a state or supporting a leader of a state.
Yeah.
You know, that 2016 didn't change us much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, using a bunch of like racial slurs or weird semi-racial slurs.
Doesn't count you out.
Doesn't.
Hey, Iowa.
Maybe it makes the race a little bit tighter, kind of, a little bit. Okay, so now we turn to you. You guys tweeted at us at hashtag TWIL at the Damage Report. And Jerry Swan said, I learned that the every vote only counts if it's going to help the Republican candidate win. Otherwise, screw it. We're not interested. We don't want to know. Sad Trombone learned that a lot of friends and family I love have economic anxiety. And it's pretty soul crushing. Thanks, Trump, for bringing that out. Yeah. Yeah, Florida, a lot of economic anxiety on election day for some reason.
Yes.
Ron DeSantis is a guy who suffers from a lot of economic anxiety. Mm-hmm. And obviously for a lot of people, economic anxiety is a thing, but for some people, that's not what it means.
My favorite
doesn't
thing
mean about economic so much.
His run is that the reporters pointed out for months, his website doesn't have an issues tab.
Oh, so really?
What are you even voting for?
Wow. And this is not like what random state legislator. The governor, he's like, platform.
But not that one.
Yeah.
His platform is don't monkey this up.
Exactly.
And that
exactly.
was enough.
And that really says it all. So Shivala Madlina, my former co-host on True North, learned that Obamacare is still standing and the House majority is not. Just imagine if we just started with Medicare for all. So a little bit of good news there. Mm-hmm. We did. Well, let's remember that for all the bad of this week, this was a very, very good election for Democrats. Not only in taking so many of these governorships, getting the House majority with a lead that continues to expand day by day, I think something like, as of right now, they flipped 372 state legislative seats. That's really big, obviously much more to do, but that is gigantic for one election. Let's see if you have a comment on this. Really, no. Well, okay. Jeff Waldorf, we'll end on this. I learned that the only Diablo game we're getting is on mobile, Black. So he's talking about video games there. Yeah, that is sad. I'd like a Diablo 4. I'm assuming you're not a Diablo
fan.
No idea. Okay, so that's we're gonna end on non-politics there. This was a big week. So much more to do. Recover over the weekend, and then let's get ready for 2020. Thank you, Brooke, for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Happy Friday, everyone.
Thank you for watching, everybody. We will see you next Monday. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.